Benvenuti al podcast di Antonino Saggio.
Po të kuptoni rolin mjaftë rëndësishëm që Antonio Saggio luan në vetëm Itali për mendimin e arkitekturë, por me gjitha është një mendim i cili është materializuar në një sër iniciativa që kanë të bëjnë me internetin, por edhe me publikimin të zakonshëm të librit tradicional. Dhe së fundi, Antonio Saggio vjen një libër mjaftë rëndësishëm, nuk duhet përmend serinë e librave që ka botuar. Kemi kënaqësi që ai na dhuroi për këtë tek në shkollës një seri të botimeve të tij, si vetëm ne do ta kemi mundësi pastaj ta pasurojmë me kolana të plotë të botimeve të tij. Por duhet të referoj botimin e fundit. Është një libër i cili bën një përmbledhje teorike dhe filozofike të gjithë procesit që ka krijuar revolucionin e arkitekturës dhe dizajnit të tërësi nga revolucioni industrial, nga rrëma të tila si që janë Bauhausi dhe në ditët të tona ku aplikimi i teknologjisë dhe do të interneti, dhe teknologjisë bazuar në pra mbi aplikimin kompjuterit ka sjell një revolucion në mentalitetin e shoqërisë, por edhe një veçantë dhe të profesionistëve të kushtë sonë. Që që Antonio Saggio jep një kontribut të zakonshëm për të përmbledhur në një libër dhe për të sjell, jo vetëm ne, por komunitetit arkitektëve më që se sa Italia dhe Shqipëria, një material i cili është mjaft ekstrakt dhe që të do na ndihmojë shumë për të bërë kërkim shkencor, të studiuar dhe për të bërë një arkitekturë dhe urbanistikë më të mirë. Në fakt, mua më vjen mirë që Antonio Saggio këtu vjen sot në mënyrë krejt spontane dhe vjen falë dhe iniciative që vjen nga studentët dhe nga stafi i ri. U fatashu që të rritë përmend emra, do të them që ka qenë një propozim që merri në fillim të këtij viti për të marrë kontakt me Antonio Saggio, që ishte mjaft i interesuar për këtë vit në Shqipëri, kishte një eksperiencë shqiptare. Gjatë bisedës që zhvilluam, ai ka qenë profesor në gjithë vendet e rajonit dhe tudi ishte vetëm një Shqipëri që ishte vendi më jashtë, për arsye që ju mund të imagjinoni. Por është mjaft domethënë se sot ai shtu me ne, u morëm kontakt, kemi zhvilluar një dialog mjaft interesant, jo vetëm online, por edhe këtu tek prezencë e tij. Do të kemi kënaqësinë që sot të kemi një prezantim pikërisht bazuar mbi votimin e tij më të fundit. Dhe shpresoj që do të ketë një kënaqësi për të gjithë. Aktualisht jemi duke diskutuar me të për të organizuar vitin e ardhshëm një workshop i cili do të ketë ndoshta një kombinim i përvojës së shkollës sonë eksperimentale dhe nga ana tjetër edhe i përvojës alternativës së tij jashtë auditorëve dhe tuaj eksperiencës ti në Universitetin La Sapienza të Romës. Është një përvojë të cilën ai po iniciativë private, profesorë të tjera, të cilën ai po përpiqet të bashkojë fytyrisht përvojat e tij akademike me ato praktike të firmimore. Pra, do të shkojmë ndoshta në një workshop që do të zhvillohet pse jo edhe në Itali, edhe në Shqipëri duhet të kombinohet me fazë. Po kjo është pjesë e diskutimit që ne do të punojmë dhe do të diskutojmë së bashku. Sot do doja që të fokusohemi te prezantimi dhe të përfitojmë maksimalisht nga kjo. Nga të prezentim, por ju inkurajoj që këtë libër ta do të dëshironi ta gjeni në internet, e gjeni sajtin e tij, në njoftimin që është çuar, mund ta downloadoni, e gjeni bibliotekë origjinale, mund ta kërkoni nëpërmjet internetit apo rrosisë, sepse është vërtet një libër që ja vlen që arkitektët ta kenë. Sa e kujtona.
Thank you very much. It is really a pleasure for me to be here, and actually I would like to speak in Italian because I feel almost at home, but I understand that you prefer that I speak in English, generally speaking. So I have very good sensation about being here in the school, and I'm I would like not to make the lecture about the book, because the book is the past. I'd like more to do a lecture for the future. What we can build together, and what are so many interesting energy that is happening here. And I was really, really impressed. I have to say, this is, from my point of view, Polis is like a dream come true. Really, many of us that are in academia think to start from scratch. In certain moments, it's important to start again. And I've really never seen something like that. So I have really to say very, very sincerely that I am extremely happy and honored to be here, not in a formal way, but also because there is a common sensation, common points of view. So I'm really, really happy to be here. I also saw the school, the new school. I'm not sure that many of the students have seen it already. It is a very exciting place, extremely exciting place, and I'm sure you will be very happy there, and it's a fantastic enterprise. So I'm really, really glad to be here. At the same time, we cannot change completely the rule of the game. I wrote a book, I am also a professor, and I'm supposed to deliver some material that is, it is, I think, important for you in a new school, in a new era, in a way that you are posing yourself new questions. So I think the book and this type of discussion that we are going to have today will allow you to pose some interesting questions and probably have some way of really think about certain matters that are important. Okay, for me the style of the presentation is as important as the presentation per se. So the style of communication, the material, is as important as the thing that we say. So since 11 years I always and only do presentation by internet, which is a very important point. That means that all the material that I'm going to show you is already there. So you can access the material and you can follow the link and basically have everything there. So it's important that you understand how to access the material. It is very simple, actually. You just are in Google and you type my name. Okay. And then you end up in my home page, which is this. Now, the home page, it's rich, very, very, very rich of things. I think some of you know these things. And here is the announcement of the lectures. These are other lectures that I've done recently. These are the lectures that are already done. I'm coming from Ottawa, so here you can see the whole lecture in Ottawa and access the audio, etc. But when a new lecture is going to be given, it's not nice that the link is already there. So there is a hidden link, and that's the trick. So you that are assisting to the lecture, you can just go now to the actual material knowing where the hidden link is. So I was curious in this picture, and I decided to have the hidden link here on the red tie. So you go in the red tie, you follow. Lots of content behind this game. So the material is there, the lecture is there, everything it is shared, and at the same time we are talking of something quite serious. What are we going to talk? It is a new book of history of architecture. We've done the evolution of architecture in some way was always accompanied, was always together with important books or with the books that shape the new direction to go and give a kind of perspective that going from the past was projected towards the future. So several books of architecture, history of architecture books has been written, of course, many very important and then in some way shape the way to go. Because we need, of course, history not as much as knowing the past, but also to project our intention to the future, as you probably imagine easily. So basically, the title of the book, which is this one, actually the book is only in Italian for now, but you can access it. I think will be a very interesting reading for many of you. The Italian is rather rich, but as I say, it's not too difficult to understand, of course. It's much more difficult to understand a TV show than read than read a book of architecture. So the book is called Architecture and Modernity, from Bauhaus to IT Revolution, to IT Revolution in Architecture. So there are many layers that are behind this title, and we are going to discuss of some of them. But first, I really wanted to, in this 1 hour and 15 minutes or so, give you ideas about many things that are not only the content, is also the methodology and the philosophy and the scope to write such a book. So I started with several simple statements that are very simple at the beginning, but then you understand the implication of those simple statements. Many actions that we do start from rather simple and direct statements, and then we understand the implication of that. So the first thing is that the book of history is not a Home Depot, or doesn't mean it's not a supermarket. It's not a place where there is information placed in scaffolding or in shelves that you go there and you peek. So a history of architecture cannot be described with the items that he presents, but evidently with something else. And what is this something else? It is a kind of a tautology. It's the history that wants to tell. So a book of history of architecture, in our particular case, that goes from the Bauhaus to IT Revolution, is really based on the history that wants to tell. It seems a tautology, but actually it is not. There is a series of implications behind this statement. So when you approach such a book, you have really to not approach as a collector, as a pure collection of items. They are not only items, it's the story that these items want to put together in the words of the author. So another very interesting question, I think, it is, from this point of view, what is history? And surely the history is not only the succession of facts that are one on top of the other, but in some way, a very interesting way to understand history can be with the word of inquire. It's a kind of an inquiry that you try to do in order to understand how things are happened in some way. But on the other side, this type of inquiries, of inquires, or inchieste in Italiano, are really, really, really very tricky. Actually, if there is one place that is full of bugie, is full of lies, is exactly history. History is full of lies, huge lies. And the more that you understand, the more you understand that this field of lies, basically, it is instrumental. Of course, it is done by purpose. But in some way, in the history of political and history, the field of this so-called lie, or let's say very peculiar way to put things in order, can be very, very minimized. But in the field of history of art and history of architecture, in some way there is a much larger possibility of creating structures and perspective of facts that will in some way create an environment in which to operate. So, and this is exactly what happened with this very relevant history of architecture that has been done in the last centuries. All this history of architecture creates a series of interpretation of reality, selected a series of facts in order to create a field of operation that was projected into the future. Now, a book of an essay and a book of architecture must have also a thesis. Must have a thesis. What is the thesis? What is the idea behind this effort? And the idea behind this effort it is based on the idea of a shift of paradigm that is really crucial in the organization and in the thinking of this book. What is this idea of the shift of paradigm? Here we have to be a little bit concentrated. It is a simple concept, but we have to understand what does it mean, otherwise we don't understand what's going on. The idea comes from Thomas Kuhn, a philosopher and a epistemologist at the same time. And basically the idea is that science can live within certain vision of the world or a certain paradigm or a certain set of rules up to a certain moment. It can kind of enlarge that paradigm, that existing paradigm, up to a certain moment. And then there is a moment in which that paradigm doesn't work anymore and should be a shift, a complete shift of paradigm, a complete revolution. So that idea of a shift of paradigm is a very powerful idea. In science, for example, means that we all know that at the beginning of the 17th century and going the next centuries was built with the process that goes from Galileo to Cartesio, to Newton, to Leibniz. It was basically built that idea that we know as classical physics, for example. And there is a very clear organization and vision of the world, and with that paradigm, many very important things have been done, of course. Very, very important things have been done. But then we understand that paradigm was kind of extended and extended up to a certain point, but generally what happened with the quantum physics and with Einstein vision and with other important revolutions in science at the beginning of last century, definitely that paradigm was overcome. What does it mean? That doesn't mean that the old paradigm is not useful anymore. It is useful for certain things, but the shift of paradigm was in some way something that was very, very important to acquire and to build new knowledge and really with a kind of revolutionary action to go ahead and to conquer new knowledge and make new things, which is exactly what happened. So that idea of the shift of paradigm is very, very important for my point of view and is really the basis of the book. The whole idea that is an idea that is not only presented in the book is in some way is an idea that is almost more than 10 years that I'm working with that, is that the actual phase, it is so strongly characterized by information technology. And information technology really represents a change of paradigm from the industrial world. So from the industrial world that was so heavily characterized good part of the last century, basically we are now in a new paradigm that is the paradigm that is based by information technology. This shift of paradigm has tremendous influences in every aspect of life, from economic to politics to way that we actually live, etc., etc., etc. So, and that phenomenon was very well known and has been analyzed extremely well. Just I remember one of the most famous person that is called Alvin Toffler, that already in the 80s create the third wave, no? We are nella terza ondata, in the moment of the information technology. So that idea of the shift of paradigm, it is at the base of this book. And this is why it is called from Bauhaus to IT revolution in architecture, that really wanted to show the reader what is this change of paradigm, what are the new challenges that are in front of us, what are the new opportunities that are in front of us. But the specificity of this book, it is that it is built with an historical process. So it's not just an essay, it's not only focused on that, but it is really built as a process in some way. It piles up many things in order to do that, but that is the thesis of the book, and that's why it is called From Bauhaus to IT Revolution in Architecture. Then there is another aspect that it is very, very important in the concept of the book. It is the idea about modernity. And this is another key concept that is behind the book. I'm just giving very few concepts, but are a kind of conceptual framework within which then you can really understand what's going on. My idea, if I can create this structure in your mind, then you understand what's going on. So the other idea, it is the idea of modernity. So as you have seen, everything is built in the title. The title, we said, From Bauhaus to IT Revolution, exactly what goes with this idea of changing of paradigm. And the other idea is this one of modernity, architecture and modernity. Now, here must be very clearly expressed what do we mean by modernity. And that is something that in some way I share, is a way of approaching this matter that I share with Bruno Zevi, that is an Italian critic and historian that I was very close to, particularly in the last 10 years of his life. I collaborated with him in many, many, many projects, many editorial projects. And the whole idea is that modernity in this context, in the way that we approach, is not something that is related to a chronological order. In many cases, in a lot of literature, the modern world, for example, started with Cristoforo Colombo invention of America, or started with the Industrial Revolution at the end of the 18th century, etc. That is a type of idea that puts the word modernity related to a chronological order. Or there is another idea that there is just the modern world that basically started, let's say, with Baudelaire looking at the industrial city and discovering that a new world was there, that was the modern world in relationship with the past world. And the type of idea, it is very used also in the whole burn of the so-called modern architecture, the CIAM, the Congress of International Architectural Modern Architecture. But this concept, the concept that we are using, Zevi and I, modernity, is a different way to put it. And as not that aspect of chronological order, and as not exactly that aspect of opposition of the old world with the new world, the idea is a much more dynamic idea. In this definition, modernity is what is a tentative answer to the crisis of the world. Is a tentative answer that implies a kind of inside challenge and attention towards the construction of a new world and a new aesthetics related to that. So the interesting aspect of this definition is that put together two elements. On one side is the crisis, the difficulties, and the change of the situation in which we are operating, and the other side, it puts the effort to answer with positive actions and action that implies also an aesthetic change to that crisis. So it is an interesting concept, because at that point it's not chronologically placed, can be a very modern attitude in the moment that Brunelleschi invented the perspective, or Borromini created Sentiva la Sapienza, or can be or not to be in our time. It depends really on that type of tension. So these are kind of two key concepts, the shift of paradigm and this idea of modernity, that are built into the book. Now what I generally do here, I'll do this little slideshow only for you to relax. Because I know up to this point you have a little bit of time to digest those two concepts. Okay? So we just relax a little bit. And we also, I'll do a game that I always do with my students, and then they know, I call the black hole game. What is the black hole game? It is like this. That in class, sometimes we talk about, I don't know, the Ville Savoie. And then we talk for 10 minutes for the Ville Savoie. And then suddenly I come to my mind that maybe some of them, they don't know what is Ville Savoie. So the game is the following, and I'm doing this with you. The game is the following, that imagine that you don't know what is Ville Savoie. But it is clearly from the context that you are supposed to know. What do? You play the black hole game. That means that you assume that you know. You don't tell anybody that you don't know what Ville Savoie. You keep it very secret that you don't know. But of course, as soon as you go home, you'll try to fill the black hole. So this is a very interesting technique. Because architects must know things, but particular students don't know many things, but they have to understand from the context that when central things are important, it's very important to feel the things. And so this is a little bit of a kind of the book is also, of course, is not a manual, and there are not hundreds of architecture that are mentioned, it's not hundreds of architects at all. We are going to see what the book it is about. But the things that are inside it are really important. So I'll just show you a little bit, some slides, so only that we relax a little bit. We can talk very, very, very shortly about certain issues now. So what's going on really, it is that this book in some way is really built as well, I don't know. It's a very nice dessert, okay? And then if you know a very nice dessert, what you know is that it's done by many layers. The whole idea is that it is not a steak. You know, a steak has one layer. It's a very nice dessert, as many layers all combined together. So the real effort is not to do one thing, but to do many things simultaneously, but they are in some way together. They are in some way together, and then so there are those many layers that will contribute to the enthusiasm of the reader, first of all, with the pleasure of the reader, that which is absolutely crucial. You know, it's a kind of intellectual adventure reading a book that must be very, very important for the reader, first of all, and that the sensation that is gaining a lot in the process of reading. Otherwise, there is no scope, no issue. So, okay, It's the first time that I put this strange frame here. It's all right. It doesn't matter. You can have different styles. So now let's move on, and then let's talk about certain activities of mine. Let's forget the book for a second, and let's see some other activities of mine that in some way are interlocked with the book, and in some way allow the book to happen. Okay. I am an operating architect, but mainly I think a teacher of architecture. Really, really, the most important thing is to be a teacher of architecture. Although, and in particularly, what it seems strange at the beginning, it is in really architectural design. I do teach architectural design. I don't teach history of architecture. I teach architectural design and also architectural design and information technology. But strangely enough, or probably because of the Italian situation, I'm being involved in writing since the beginning. I always also wrote a lot. So these are links that are important because those to many studies and many publications, and many of these have the links. So the fact to have the links are very important. Here are some of the major books that I have done. But particularly, what I think it is important is that I have been for years editors of book series, basically following Bruno Zevi. What does it mean to be editor of a book series? Means to have a philosophy, that be sure that you want to promote a certain type of architecture and not other type of architecture, that you select the writer, and then you instruct the writer and you follow the writer very much in the process, and then you deliver the books. Particularly I was involved in this book series that is called Gli Architetti, Monography of Architecture, that are pocket books that were also distributed in newsstands in Italy. We've done 150 of them. I curated around 40 monography of the architects, always speaking certain type of architecture, certain type of authors, and certain type of young authors. So in some way it is an activity that it depends, can be seen as a kind of a PhD following in some cases, but in other cases where the authors are completely mature on themselves, is a more typical curatorial work. So there is this work, and this is the book series, and you can go there and see the books. And, you know, there are many. I'm not going to talk about that, of course, but behind this book, there is a lot of this work. And one thing that the person thinks that are very useful, it is this collection of articles that is called Coffee Break. There are around 80 articles here, and generally they are articles that are little books or large essays by themselves. The reason is that these articles were all articles published in Italian magazines, and generally they were done quite professionally. And then I was frustrated by the fact that these articles were all there in the library, you know, and then after the magazine was out, basically they were kind of lost. So I invented this structure, and that was hosted in the most relevant Italian magazine of the internet, it's called architetto.it. I invented this structure that I re-edited this article, and I put them into in internet, and they are very useful and very followed. The other advantage of this is that with automatic translation, you know, you can have an idea in other languages if you want. And then this is our magazine that deals with information technology and architecture. Everything here It is completely available online. So these are all materials that can be very interesting because it's new materials. We are not talking of extremely established architects, but we are talking of new groups of architects, mainly, that are operating in the world and then they are important from the point of view of mainly the relationship between information technology and architecture. So in many cases, these articles are almost the first real essay that has been written on that particular group. So you are going, now is finishing to download the one, so you're going to have an idea. Okay, so the magazine, this is a real magazine, and I gave several copies to the library, but at the same time, there is the version online, and the version online has also the advantage that you can have translation if you want, if you don't understand. For example, this is Gernot Richer, that is a very nice architect, that do parametric design and parametric installation, as I know this with pleasure also, of course, here has been done in many parts of the world, etc., etc., etc. And this, for example, is an extremely interesting article about what is being done in the Bartlett, particularly the Bartlett Unit 23. So if you see, it's a real essay, and it's not typical to have such in-depth reading of things that are emerging right now. So it's a kind of avant-garde magazine, and it's also available there. And these are some of the work that we do in Sicily, in this our Sicily lab, that probably one day we will invent something together there. Okay. Okay, now that we, okay, then the other thing, the most important thing, I'm talking about three or four background behind this book. Then the most important thing that I've been doing since 1997, it is this book series that is called The IT Revolution in Architecture. This book series, basically, it is the same philosophy of the book. It is even called IT Revolution, exactly to bring that idea of the shift of paradigm. This book has been very, very popular because it's been translated in many other languages. It's been originated in Italian, but we have a fantastic Chinese edition of this book series, believe it or not. There is an English version. We've done 27 books in English, and it goes on in Italian, and in Italian we arrived to 35 books. So it's kind of a long adventure, and each book, I gave several here to the school, each book deals with a specific area of interest in the relationship between information technology and architecture. In some cases, it's a topic. For example, this is one of the last that deals with the use of the stone within a technology that is related to information technology and the sensibility that is related to information technology, but there are all sorts of approach. There are others that are monographs of architects that have an important impact on information technology, others that are essays of architects that put their points of view in, because they are very dedicated to information technology. So this is, for example, Cass Osterwitz, so these are the friends Benedict and Rogina, and so on and so on. So there are lots of books related to this that is in some way related to the matter. So So far what we've done then, we've done, first we understood what is the main idea, the main structures about the book, the idea of the shift of paradigm and the idea of modernity that is intended in this way, and then we saw a little background work, because, you know, a person arrives and writes a 500-page book, on what background that is done. That is fundamental to understand. And so the background, it is a lot of work in this area, both in the area of treatises and in the area of information technology. In jargon, this is an anti-frame. Okay? Why I put it this word like it is nothing? It's not nothing. It is very important thing that I've said. Because basically, the idea behind this effort is really show to the future generations way to go because of the shift of paradigm. So, there is nothing against another work per se that made important step into understanding of architecture, but it's also very important to understand the difference between things, otherwise everything becomes great. So this is a book that is, you can also consider as an anti-frantum, because it really changes a lot of the ideas and the preconception and the things that are there. And you must be frank when you say these things. You know, we were talking today at lunch about the idea of the person interviewed about forms follow functions. Right? And again, in doing essays of this type of weight, you must be very direct. You are changing the paradigm, you are changing the things, and you are doing new things and new vision to do things differently. So that's why I put these things like it is nothing, instead it's very important. So now a little bit of concentration to understand what is the structure of this book and why you will probably like to read it and what you can get out of it, I think. Now, the whole idea of this book, you remember that idea of crisis and modernity. The whole idea is that the book is divided in 8 major parts. So in some way are like 8, not chapter, but really parts. There are 8 parts. Each part, more or less, not exactly, is focusing on a moment, a decade, but most than everything, it is focused on a key word or a key concept. That, from my point of view, was the best way to show to the reader what was the real game, what was the real problem, what was the real issues, what was the real crisis, what was the real effort of the architect in that particular moment, and why those things were so important in that particular moment, and why architecture took those revolutionary steps in that particular moment, because of these forces, very important forces that shaped the moment, basically. So, this structure creates, let's say, 8 lens or 8 way of looking at this process that goes from Bauhaus to the IT revolution in architecture. So, the first part, it is called Gli anni della macchina. The years of the machine. Why that? Because it was really in this decade, finally, the whole idea that has to be a profound shift in architecture, because it was the moment of industry, was the moment in that finally the whole industrialization world was able finally to have shape in architecture. And so this keyword, everything rotates in some way around the concept of industry and the concept of the machine and the interrelationship between these two things. But at the same time, the book is not an essay. An essay that means only talk in general of the topic, has to select the specific architect and the specific architecture in order to express that idea, show the relevance, exactly build that complex dessert of many layers that are interlocking one with the other. So, in this part, basically what happened, there is one first chapter that is called L'antefatto, l'architettura tardata, that is a kind of looking very briefly at the 19th century to understand certain phenomena that was kind of emerging slowly in the 19th century and give to the reader a kind of background that is not sure that he has, particularly if it is a young reader. But even if it is a completely grown-up reader, it is nice to enter to the matter from that antefatto. Then there is this central part that deals with really the Bauhaus, and this is so much an anti-Frampton, because, just to make a joke, because if you look at Frampton, he dedicates to the Bauhaus building three lines. Go there and look. And in my case, the Bauhaus building and the old Bauhaus experience becomes so central in order to understand how architecture was able finally, after more than 100 years of tries, was finally able to create an answer, a logical answer to the Industrial Revolution. And that answer was aesthetic, hygienic, functional, political, ethical, at the same time. So, for me, the Bauhaus was very important in this book because it was creating the starting point and, the consolidation of the industrial paradigm. So, the problem here is not that we like or don't like the Bauhaus, I personally like. The idea is to understand why you have to change so many things from that paradigm because you are in another paradigm. So it's a kind of a much more complex game that is played in the book. And then there are this chapter, one about Le Corbusier, and the titles of the chapters are very always important. They give the reader a kind of key to enter, for example, lo spazio sonoro in the case of Le Corbusier. Then we talk about a series of movements of innovation that happened in the 20s that are very important, not so much per se, but also because germinated in the work of particularly Mendelssohn and Mies van der Rohe that cannot be understood without that. And then there is a very important chapter about lo spazio etico, that is the whole effort to create a type of architecture that is open to the new emerging needs of the workers, basically of the family of the workers, etc., etc. And that goes evidently for Germany to Russia as key elements. So what is happening here is that you don't read the 20s. As a succession of all the architects that were there. There is a very important hierarchy. Certain things become very important and very relevant, and others are in the background, others are not even mentioned. So that is not the manual, but again it goes with that idea of the black hole. Okay, how can you deal with housing if you don't know what the narco housing is? Very interesting question. It's a black hole in many cases. I'll tell you, it's impossible. It's impossible. That's why to the Narcon film it is given 5 pages. Because, from my experience, from my point of view, from whatever relevance, that is a point that whoever deals with these things up to a certain level cannot not know, must know. Okay? And that is a trust that is between the author and the reader. So if it is there, there is a judgment, because it's important, and so on and so forth. And at the same time, why there are things that are not relevant, are not there, not necessarily because are not good architecture, can be very good architecture, but the only issue that it is that from an historical point of view, from an historical relevance, they are not so relevant, so they are not so important from an historical point of view to really express what are the issues and what are the moments there. So now you understand that the structure of this talk seems very easy at the beginning, and actually it is not, and it's getting a little more complex, and it's going to be a little more complex, and then we relax only at the end, but we have to follow the structure. Then there are the second part of the book that I call the ears of the individuality. More or less is what happened in the 30s. And what happened in the 30s is a fantastic phenomenon, really beautiful phenomenon, that is that it happened, this incredible revolution in the history of architecture, that finally, for the first time, after many, from the time of Renaissance, basically, architecture changed completely. This new paradigm of industry became, was clear how to do it in a new architecture, a completely new architecture. Well, so a revolution really happened. And what happened in the 30s, very interesting. That was a process, a very interesting process of negotiation that was from that revolution, and the fact that you want to adhere to that revolution, you want to be part of that new world, and on the other side, new ideas that belong to your own world. And your own world of individual world means history, means nature, means context, means specificity. So what happened really, a very interesting process in the 30s, that's why there is such incredible, nice architecture, is exactly that process. A process that on one side there is a new language, a new topic, new issues, and on the other side those issues were merged with, let's say, personal or local values. How you do that? How you express that? How you show that strength of the architectural thinking in that moment? You pick the champion. You pick the champion. And the champions, from my point of view, of this attitude are, first of all, a Finnish guy called Alvar Aalto. You cannot understand Alvar Aalto if you don't understand exactly this. The fact that a person that wants to adhere to this revolution, and on the other side, a person that brings in nature, history, landscape of his land. The second guy is an Italian, called Giuseppe Terragni. And Giuseppe Terragni is all about this. I wrote a monograph on Terragni 10 years ago. It's all about that. Basically, it's the process in which history, even typology and even morphology of classical cities in Italy are merged within the tension towards the new architecture. And the third one is Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank Lloyd Wright in the 30s, Frank Lloyd Wright is a genius that in a kind of history like that can come into the scene 3 or 4 times, you know. But it came here because really Frank Lloyd Wright on one side was an architect that was passionate about the model and the machine as much as the others, but on the other side was very much interested to its own specific world and its own specific tradition, that is a tradition of landscape, is a tradition of values, is a tradition of nature, etc. And you don't understand Frank Lloyd Wright if you don't understand that process. So the 30s basically are depicted with these three key people, but at the same time, of course, in the background there are other persons and are important in the narration. Then there is the third part. We are after the word. After the word, the new keyword that really gives you the key to understand what's going on is the reconstruction of the meaning. And the reconstruction of the meaning is really a key thing here, because after the war in some way also demonstrated all the limits of the industrialism per se. Industrialism not only brought to progress, but also brought to destruction. It's the same process, basically. So this whole idea to do an effort, a personal effort, a social effort, a political effort, a kind of refoundation, after the war was very, very important, it was a key to understand different phenomena, including the emergency, so important, of city planning as an important issue, and the work of Le Corbusier, but mainly about Lucan. Lucan played an important role in this particular moment, in this particular framework, because it is really an architect that pose himself the idea of a refoundation of architecture in some way, a refoundation that in this case was based on, let's say, profound values of construction, organization, typology, etc. And at the same time, in the 15th, happened this other aspect that I call the liberation of form, that is all the experience of the engineers in the 50s, and the experience of engineers, Candela, Nervi, Morandi, Torroja, and others, are really all people that really liberated the form. They were the most anti-functional guys around. The idea that the engineer is kind of a strict follower of rules is completely denied by this case. These are really the guys that for the first time in some way gave a level of autonomy of the form, exactly through the construction, and exactly through the calculus, exactly through the specificity of their job, but really for the first time in some way the old idea that there is a one-to-one relationship between things has been liberated. And it's not the case that Orr Hudson basically was able to arrive because it was open that door. Then another particularity of the book is that each new part, it is introduced by three or four pages, more or less, that describe the general situation in which the architects are operating. So there are points of contact with the politics, with the philosophy, with the social costume, and particularly with the arts. So the book is not an history of art book, but there are 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 artists that are mentioned in the right moment, I think, to really show that complexity and the depth of thinking. For example, this particular case, just to make an example, in the reconstruction of the meaning, there is not a case that there is one image of Giacometti, for example, and so on and so forth. The 60s, I call it the years of the Big Bang, is a year of liberation, and it's also a year in which architecture in some way loses its status of a integral discipline. Basically, architecture became kind of many different fields and many different attitudes and coexisting one with the other. So that process of, in some way, the architecture was kept together as a very cohesive discipline by the so important work of the masters of the first generation of modern architects, like Le Corbusier, Mies, Gropius. All these persons died in the 60s, basically. And there is like that the father that keeps everything together with his genius was lost in that moment. And so architecture became much more open to different experimentation. But the particular thing is that this different experimentation didn't want to keep the integrity of the whole architecture. They accept to only look on one side. So that phenomenon was important, and also was important moments in which there are movements forward and backwards in the 60s, very, very important. For example, a very important movement backwards is the moment of Aldo Rossi and La Tendenza Italiana, that is something that actually started in the 60s as a tentative answer to the problem of the city, of making the city. Modern movement was not really able to have a very strong idea how to create cities, and in some way all the Italian Tendenza and Aldo Rossi gave an answer to that, but gave an answer looking at the past. The fifth part of the book is called Gli anni del linguaggio. We are in the 70s, and the language of architecture in some way becomes the central issues for architects, the mainstream in which the architectural debate was organized, mainly a kind of tautological and very closed system in itself, although, of course, existing in architecture very, very interesting other fields, but they were kind of minority fields, fields in which participation with the user, for example, was very important, which some type of spontaneous approach to architecture was important, etc. But what kind of minority? In this fifth part, there is made the story of that. And then the sixth part is Gli anni dei contesti e dei palinsesti. Basically in the 80s, 70s, 80s, there is on one side the postmodern movement, and the postmodern movement is a set of ideas that are relating to how the architecture has to adhere as strictly as possible at the existing context, and how it's possible to create a language of architecture that is accepted by everybody in some way. That was some of the issues, and in order to do that, the use of classical orders or the classical imagery was important. But on the other side, what is very interesting is that this idea of the context as a guiding principle of architecture also germinated new ideas in architecture in another direction, in a direction that is not mimetic, is not revivalistic, is much more abstract, but is much more vital. And so I show here at the beginning the moment of the starting of formation of these ideas, particularly through three people. One that is Peter Eisman. Peter Eisman worked on to the idea of the context, with the idea of layering, with the idea of the palimpsest, with the idea that the context is not just something that we see, but something that we study and we do critical action on it. The other architect, that it is Frank Gehry, because for him also the context is very important, but it's a context that is a low context. It's a context done by popular attitude, by simple material. It's the context of the periphery in some way. And that context of the periphery became an engine for his way of thinking. He saw a vitality in the periphery, in what he called the cheapscape, and that vitality basically became a very important element of his architecture. Thinking about Tirana, I may really think about that, how certain vitality can bring, you know, to architectural idea. Basically, that process is a process that has, in Gehry, the champion, in the pop art, is fuel. And the third person that worked in context in a very different way is Zaha Hadid. It's the young Zaha Hadid that really conceived a way in which architecture and landscape were merged together in a way that was not seen before. So basically the figure of architecture and the figure of ground were combined in a way that was completely new, because before the architecture was an object placed on a tableau, and instead with that type of approach architecture and landscape became constantly merging one with the other. So these three approaches in the 80s are all in some way generated by a critical answer to the context. So the context is not revivalistic, but is always thinking in a different way. It's a very interesting different angle. And that produced basically many of the of the ideas that are generated in the 90s. Because in the 90s, basically, is one of the most happy phase of architecture of the old times. It's very, very rare in the history of architecture that we had such an amount of great, important building happening all over the world. Basically, it's an extreme, if you look statistically, and you see what happened, for example, in the 70s or in the 60s in terms of architecture, is so little, very, very few things in comparison with what happened in the 90s. 90s was really an explosion of quality of architecture in the old cities. In many cities was clear that strategic city planning and quality of architecture was an important economical factor, because we were in an information technology era. And so in order to attract economical processes, architecture plays an important economical role, the quality of architecture, the quality of the process. So here are explained all these processes, and there are pinpoint important events and important architects. And here we come finally, I'm sure that you are tired, but one thing is, certain thing must be done, right? So the old book must be described, otherwise it's another thing. In another occasion we can do another type of lecture, but since we are decided to have the lecture of the book, we'll do this. So we finally arrive to the final chapter, La rivoluzione informatica dell'architettura. So the last 10 years. And here, as you know, having done 35 books about information technology and architecture, having wrote recently, this essay actually is in English, and is a theory book about the new ideas related to information technology and architecture. This is rather easy to have it delivered if you are interested. This is in English. There is also in Italian, but this is the English version. It's a book that I recommend for people that really want to understand in depth what are the new issues related to information technology in architecture. It's called The IT Revolution Architecture Thoughts on a Paradigm Shift. But anyway, here I have the challenge, that was, okay, oh my God. I had the challenge to show the content. So what are certain basic important ideas related to the information technology and architecture, but not in an essay way, but also showing examples. In some way, talking about architects and talking about issues. So in this case, what I created is a structure that combined two approaches. Basically, I select a level of increasing complexity. The first one I call it espressioni digitali. What does it mean? It means that there is, in some way, a better sound of digital world that goes with the process and the sensibility towards digitalization. In some way, digitalization, the fact to move in a world of digit, in some way, it is part of our sensibility. So there are many architecture that in some way adhere to that idea of a digital condition, of a digital sensation. So that is something rather superficial. It is rather superficial, but at the same time rather interesting. So surfaces become, in some way, on one side they become again almost decorative. On the other side, become a container of deep content. It's difficult to explain this contradiction, but imagine that in many cases these surfaces can be alive, can really bring information, be interactive, being alive. So it is a complex thing, a complex process. But anyway, this is just the first and more superficial approach. Then there is this another thing that is rather interesting, is how the whole idea of landscape, that was, as we mentioned already, we found it in Zadi, how this idea developed within a digital sensibility. So there are certain projects that have been selected on that particular area. Another step, more complex, goes towards the idea of the idea of the diagram. In some way, it is an idea that is very, very strongly related with certain process that has to do with information technology. The diagram, in some way, is all thinking that relates architecture to the formalism, even mathematical formalism, that is very strong in information technology. So there is all a way of looking at a research in architecture and information technology that has really put at the center the idea of the diagram, and then the type of relationship between a formalism that is typical of mathematics and information technology and architecture. So the whole idea of diagram, scripting, parametrization, that as we know today is moving out of the just production of design, because it's going directly in the production of objects. All that process, it is described here, and then they are some champions in the architectural world of this, of important level. And I think, for example, that Ben Van Berkel is one of the most relevant architects and also person that deals with information technology. And actually, the last book of my book series is Van Berkel Digitale. It just came out. The author received it. I don't have it with me because I didn't have the time to bring it and to have it, but it's the last book in my series. And then there is this last part that is in some way described. Okay, there is this other aspect that's so interesting, is that the idea that how architecture through information technology becomes also a type of infrastructure in some way, a shared issue of infrastructure, etc. And then there is really the crisis. And the crisis of information technology is in some way, in terms of entity, is a similar crisis of what Grobius and Eva House had. And you can understand that only if you think with a level of intensity of what does it mean to change profoundly the status of your work because a new force, a new opportunity, a new world, a new technology arrived there. So how much you have to change your own vision of architecture because of those forces. When you look at the Bauhaus, you really understand that in that particular moment, particularly the building of the Bauhaus was for the first time the change of so many paradigms of the past. Basically all the parameters of the past was changed. And there was also a very important element that allow all the change to happen simultaneously and give direction. We call it in some case the factor K, or the born of a new aesthetics that in some way creates the force to allow the whole other aspect, the technical aspect, the constructive aspect, the typology aspects, create like a glue and a direction to allow them to happen all together. And in that particular case, Gropius conducted a revolution that really went into all the aspects of the building. It changed completely all parameters. Even imagine the morphology. You know, the morphology didn't follow the streets anymore. It was an open thing. The hygiene, the construction, the philosophy, everything was changed. The aesthetics. But really the K factor was the transparency. Transparency was in that particular moment was kind of a level of answer that put everything together and to create also a real new vision of what the thing has to be. So the transparency in that particular moment together with the other things was really that factor that allowed the creation really of a new paradigm in architecture. So it was not the transparency per se, it was the transparency as a propellant and an accelerator of all other aspects. So, since we are in a moment of change, and since information technology is a new paradigm, and since we are all working into a new direction, probably information technology is not only visualization of digital visions, let's say, Weltanschauung or atmosphere. Probably it's not only diagram. Probably it's not only different way of generating form through parametrization. Probably there is something more. And in all my work from the beginning, the book series up to this book, I always work with the idea of that interactivity is a key element of this new phase. And what does it mean? Interactivity is a complex set of issues, but it's something that really belongs to a new generation of architecture. And it means that the building must be able to react to the change of desires of the users, to the change of outside configuration, to the change of different type of environmental forces, must be able to really, in some way, create a relationship between environment, architecture, and users in a much more complex way, in a much more interactive way. And when you start to understand that this will be a very important aspect of a new generation of architecture, and that's why you are also dealing with new paradigm, then you start to understand many other things. You start to understand why the new materials that have some level of intelligence per se, I'm thinking just of nanotechnology, in a very short time nanotechnology will arrive as a very important factor in our building, plus many other things that, you know, we start are able. At the beginning we were not able to even understand how it's possible to create an interactive building. Today, it's quite time that interactive buildings are existing. There I'll show you Adilere Scofidio images here. There are so many things, and there are Castro Ceruis and many other artists that do that. And then all that idea that the architecture loses its traditional vision to be an object, to become more a set of relationship with the environment, a set of relationship of nature, being also almost a living object itself. There are searches that are really moving in that type of spirit. So these are all ideas that there are people, many people now, that are working in this very specialized subfield of research, which doesn't mean for the reader of this book that he must necessarily participate to that. There are phases, you know, of history, of our experience, that different worlds overlap, you know, and even they can be decades or even centuries, where old world believe with coexist with new worlds, etc., etc. So, but at the same time, I think the book will give you the sense of the challenge that is in front of us in this last part. Do you think that you have energy for other 7 minutes of conclusion? It's a rhetorical question, of course. Nobody says no, never in this case. It's almost dying, but we don't say no, never say no. But just to rest a little bit, and to go to the conclusion, in all this section we don't have the time, and so I'll skip it completely. What are certain particularities about this book? But I wanted to tell about the discoveries. I want to finish with the discoveries. What will be some discoveries for you as the reader of this book? And the discoveries are, as you are going to see, important. So the first discovery, something that many of you will not know, is the relevance of Takis Xenakos, that actually is one of your neighbors. It is an extremely interesting architect, a Greek architect, and Takis Xenakos operating between 50s and 70. He committed suicide in 77 in the Grecia of the Colonnelli. Why so fascinating personality? I discovered Takis Xenakos through a process that is a romance per se that I cannot really go into to describe, but it's a very interesting process in which one young person, one student was fundamental in starting to open me the mind in this direction. Then I found the author, then I worked with the author. So it was a fantastic adventure to create the book on Takis Xenakos. But why is important, and it is in the book, it is in this book. Because Takis Xenakos is, on one side, is one architect that had very, very clearly the vision of the impact of information technology already in the 50s and the 60s. In some way he belonged to the traditional, the group of radical architects of that, of the end of 50s and 60s, but with a very, very important difference that that he really understood the role of information technology exactly as we define today. He wrote a kind of project book that's called Electronic Urbanism. He basically wrote and designed this in the course of basically all his life. But the other particularity of Takis Xenakos is that he is a fantastic architect. Very simple. He's not only a theorist, he's an architect of a great capability and great sensibility. In writing the premise of the book, I don't know why, in a certain moment I said that he can be the only person that can follow Ferragni. I don't know why I said exactly that, but having studied so much Ferragni, having known Takis Xenakos, I see that inner capability of creating architectural form and architectural construction. So anyway, that is just a detail. You will discover Takis Xenakos in this book, and you'll see in which moment I played his work. So in one way, Takis Xenakos is an important role. The other thing that you are going to discover is the whole experience of the Biosphere 2 project. That is a project that is not a typical architectural project. It is really the most important ecological experiment that was never done. Basically, there are 3 hectares of, or 3 or 4 hectares of land that is completely covered and sealed, in which men lived in a completely sealed environment for 2 years, producing, recycling, using everything in decoration of 7 different ethno part that are the desert, the ocean, the Mediterranean garden, etc. It's a fantastic experiment in ecology, ecological thinking that was so revolutionary and so dangerous for the normal way of operating things, that it was in some way removed from the mainstream of the thing. And the third, the book, it is, many persons noticed that, it ends in a very apparently strange way. It ends with Samuel Mockbee and the Rural Studio. That is a fantastic experience, it's a really a beautiful experience. In which students of architecture build architecture for the community in the poorest part of America using recycling material. All of this was generated by the dream of this person that is called Samuel Mockbee that put together this really incredible experience. Incredible because it basically tackles simultaneously many, many things, and also because it makes beautiful architecture, because if it doesn't do beautiful architecture, we are not interested. The really important thing here is that, again, everything is combined. So, in some way, these 3 discoveries, let's say like that, are another way to look at the book. You can look at the book from what I said at the beginning, IT revolution, shift of paradigm, modernity, kind of responsibility of the authors to pick what is relevant in each particular moment to really express that. And you can also think this other way, that are basically each one of these discoveries represents one important thing that I really believe. The first one is really the idea that information technology, it is an absolute must for the new generation of architects, something that you cannot avoid to refer. The second one is the process of an ecological thinking that means mainly a systematic thinking. Elements are not separated but are interrelated. And the way that we have to teach architecture has to be more and more towards the interrelationship, showing that we are not producing things, but we are creating relationships. And those relationships must work in an ecological way. An ecological way means a series of interrelationships, basically. And the interrelationships are not only relationships between man and nature, as you may think, but concerns a much wider set of interrelationship, which is what ecological thinking means. And the third thing is the aesthetic. And I use this as a part of our responsibility as architects. At the end, after all this, the fact that the architect has to have the challenge to express and to find to really challenge the architectural form in order to bring meaning, it is part of our job, and I don't think that can be avoided. So, excuse me to have been too long, but probably there are some questions or whatever. I am done. What is the style of the school? Generally, you put a question to the... Ah, okay. Okay. In Italian or in English, as you prefer. Allora, andiamo, forza. Andiamo.
Basically, I'm not expecting an answer in this case, but I'm just wondering, probably all these years of research, you might have thought what would be in the future. So actually, we are living in a shift of paradigm. Have you ever thought what would happen? What would be the next shift, or what would be the next shift?
What I didn't mention too clearly, it is one moment in which we started to look in a much more complex way a series of phenomena that are in front of us. Basically, the book series and all these things started in 97, more or less. And we were all very, very sure that the information technology per se was the paradigm that would shape the future, and that with strong experimentation and installation we will find new answers, etc., etc. So it was a general tendency towards these ideas. But then happened in 2011. So the 2011 was a big crisis, I think, because we start, all of us, start to questioning more a series of aspects of the world concerning progress, concerning the way that to act and to work. So basically, even myself, I changed very much my way of teaching, for example. I start teaching less type of experiment and more type of use information technology as a way to answer to specific problems, and really to discover how information technology was instrumental to tackle specific problems. And so what I really strongly believe now is that will not be information technology per se, but will be a combination of systematic thinking related to a kind of ecological attitude and information technology together, that working together will create something important. And in any case, as an architect, I don't think that we must be too interested in knowing what is going to happen. What we should be interested in, what we believe can be important to work with, in which direction to work with. Because basically, the whole idea is that we are actors on this scene. So it's important to have a feeling where is the most interesting field, where is going to develop things faster, better, and more interesting. Where are the open fields to work with? So basically, we are actors in that process. And particularly as architects, I think it's also very important to have that vision, you know, that you decide to put your actions in where you think can be more interesting, more growing, and particularly you think that even ethical can be more important. But that is another matter, you know, it's a matter of surviving, that's another story. Not everybody can do 100%. No? Okay. Yes.
First of all, thank you very much. It was very interesting listening to all these spectrum of topics from Bauhaus architecture until the nowadays technology revolution in architecture. The Bauhaus architecture also brought a revolution, which went through many problems. As far as I know, or as far as I have been informed, or I have informed myself, it brought the necessity toward the bringing the human to a more near palace. How I can say it, scale of architecture, a more near scale of architecture, it also brought many, many problems regarding construction in architecture. For example, if you see, what can I call an example, that red, this complex of Le Corbusier, of Free. If you take a look at it from the construction and the efficiency of this functioning of this nice architecture, it was actually facing many problems in that time. So they were not ready for this step in some points of view, and until certain years after that, until like some many years after, they tried to get along with these problems and solve them. So I see in the revolution of nowadays of this technology architecture that it imposes to us a totally different scale of architecture, which can't deal with every condition in the city or in the urban context, and also it can't also deal with any kind of building. Like it is also bringing the revolution. And I'm always thinking and analyzing where is it bringing us to? It is actually a result of the globalization and the intersection that it is bringing, and the human that needs, they need always more new things to put towards this intersection and this intersection. But do you think this is gonna have a, this is gonna end to be a useful way in architecture, or it is just gonna face problems? For example, the human scale is a very big problem in this kind of architecture. And will it really find a place in every city?
As I said before, I am an architect and a designer myself, and particularly, as I said at the beginning, a professor of architecture. So I'm not a sociologist, and I'm not a person that has to do a general vision of what's going to happen, what's going to happen. What is my responsibility is, on one side, create a framework, a theoretical framework, in which judgment like yours can grow and can have a set of ideas, information, and understanding that is as profound as possible. That is on one side, and on the other side is making strategical decisions that are case by case in what is going to be done, you know, when we do a design work, when we do a thesis, when we do a project, when we do a competition, when we do a design work, how each time we combine these factors. So basically what is very clear is that the world of ideology is over. So there is not one answer, you know, nobody really thinks that there is one answer. We always think that it's we are living in a world of complexity. We live in a world with many, many opportunities, and etc. But at the same time, knowledge, understanding, perspective, and use, and understanding of the possibility of use are important responsibility for architects to have in front of each of us in our own singular design decisions. And the all singular design decisions are, in some way, wise design decision if we have knowledge, if we are understanding, and if we have perspective. So basically, this type of work creates that perspective.
Thank you for the presentation. Very interesting.
It was? Was not too tough. So too, no, it was all right.
It was a little heavy.
Was, yeah.
It's good. So yeah. The presentation.
The book is lighter in a way.
Yeah.
because you can
so
say
I enjoy it because you make this projection. If I can see it as a graph starting from the moment of self-realization up to nowadays. And especially you come to the 90s and it ends up 2000 and onward.
Yeah.
So, as you can see the graph, how it's going, you know, what's happening with the society, with the context, and what's happening also with architecture. And this is a move from the Industrial Revolution to the IT Revolution. Now maybe I'm not right, but since 2001, with this 9/11, we enter another era.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of discussion going on in the last decade. You know, this brought or shaped all the society globally and brought the discussion about terrorism and, you know, this religion issue, which was it is still very sensitive after the Cold War. We have discussion about global warming and climate change. It's very politicized, but it's going on. We have the reality of failure of real market and what's going on in the banking system worldwide now, which giving effect. Because of that, we have a monster, projected a monster, globalization, we're discussing about this. We don't know what it is maybe, but we're discussing that. We're raising question marks about market economy. And we're discussing that, in what don't we see some fear, you know, lack of trust on national or federal governments. So, you are not, you said, a social scientist, but I'm more interested in the diagram of architecture. This is another change, I think, of the paradigm. Maybe it's the third moment, because we live in this area of industrialization, and it's the era of services, and we are entering another era which I cannot define it. Do we have a name for this, or do we have some prediction? And so all together we can understand what does it mean this for the future architecture.
Oh, well, I don't know really. It is interesting your answer, because I see in your way of approaching the issue the experience of planning in some way, and I think planning as in some way as a discipline in some way cannot really avoid this type of question. Architecture also, but in planning are more central, I would say. Are more central. This book and this approach is really centered on architectural design and the responsibility of architectural design in terms of serious of things, and really opens your understanding of how to in some way which direction can be interesting to work with. In more general terms, I really believe that in this situation, probably particularly because probably we are in Italy now and also it is in a moment of collapse, I really try, okay, let's put it like that, I try to teach proactive attitude. I try to teach in this particular moment how to create a process that are based and generating from the bottom, from ideas that are generating from the bottom and then find in the process of negotiation with reality their field and their opportunity. So I'll move the target. I'll put everything always on my own personal level of responsibility as a teacher, as a designer, as a writer. And I'll tend always to avoid to generalization, because it's not in my matter of direct operativity in some way, but it is in my matter of operativity how to write, teach, design, organize book series or whatever based on certain ideas. So this one idea that is in order to answer what you are saying, I think it is at least in Italy, but surely many other parts, there is a space for bottom-up proactive attitude. And this, I know that you are so strong in connection with Holland. Holland is a great place, probably is the place in which that attitude takes place. And the real idea is a proactive attitude, in particular in architectural design, is not a flat participation process. It's a very much more dynamic type of process in which the proposal of new ideas, new concepts, find their territorial negotiation in reality. But so it's not the whole idea of participation that is what you'd like to have. Yes, and I'll give you. It's another idea. It's much more complex. So I will we'll try to implement that a lot in our teaching, etc. Because we don't believe in this particular moment there is an ideology. Probably if we were in the 30s, you know, we could believe that there is an ideology, there was a clear future, and there is a clear way, you know, of teaching planning, teaching that, and then teaching this systematic thinking. These days I think that it's very important to generate the efforts and the vision, the creativity in this type of process. So I'll try to do that all the time. And so that's why also this school, for me, it is so interesting, because I can picture the idea before the thing. So I can really picture the process that people had this idea. You have to imagine first. That is one of the first principles. You have to imagine first one possible direction of things, and then you have to put resources in order to make it. But that act of imagine first, it is really a fundamental act. So I really see in this place, in this energy, exactly that action that then found, you know, through a very complex set of work, its way to reality. But it is clearly there is an act of imagination first. You cannot do such a thing otherwise. So I'll try to teach how to do this in architectural design. And I tend to avoid too big generalization. Also because in this particular moment, particularly in Italy, we are in a moment when we don't really see other possibilities in this particular moment.
And you visited also Tirana, and you saw also the energy of the city and architecture. How would you position the impression of the city and architecture
in this story that you try to describe? It is a very mixture and complex set of things that are happening all together. In particular, for my particular case, I've been experienced to the city only too short time to say something that is really worthwhile. So I'm more a witness than a person that can say something that makes sense. What it is clear, it is that there is a very important energy. That is very clear. And that energy will be important to understand how to direct that energy towards processes that in some way are positive, instead that energy out generating that basically at the end will will end up for kill himself, you know. So that I think is the challenge. So how to kind of orient that energy towards positive processes, keeping it energy, and so that I think would be the challenge as whoever is involved in that. That is my sensation. And the energy per se, it is positive up to a certain point, you know, that is, but these are very superficial observations. I answered only because I was with you. And so I think I need to give something to you, but otherwise I will never answer to this. It's too difficult. But since we share this experience, so I did it. Oh, yes. Ma qualcuno in italiano, no? Because this English is tiring. I have to be very concentrated, you know? Yes, yes, I'm kidding. Of course you can ask in English. No, no, no. You can say in English, no problem.
If I'm correct, even according to Thomas More, that paradigm appears and that it don't just disappear, but it shifts and it replaced with another paradigm.
Yeah.
And
doesn't become it can be useful. The old paradigm can be very useful.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And all these paradigms are produced in not only produced but produces themselves in architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the main topic of it. And we have here a full system of shifting paradigms.
Yeah.
So my question is, what determines these paradigms?
Yeah. What determines these paradigms? Let's assume the vision of Alvin Toffler, okay? Alvin Toffler, basically what he says is his definition of the three waves, you know, the first wave that is agricultural wave, the second wave that is industrial wave, and the third wave that is the information technology wave. In his way, basically, it is the old Marxian way of looking at it. So, it's the mean of production. So, for this way, Toffler way, is the mean of production that change, the main mean of production, which doesn't mean that the other one doesn't exist. So the main mean of production for the agricultural phase was the land and the possession of the land. For the industrial phase was the industry and the possession of the industry. And for our phase is the information. And this type of way of looking at this phenomenon actually goes with many other proofs that we can add to it. He wrote a book about this, so you can go for understanding who is the rich in different moments, and it's not a case that today the rich is Murdoch or Berlusconi or these guys that handle the information and not the old industrialists, etc., etc. So in that case, the three waves are relating to the mean of production, basically. And the mean of production means also another very important thing, is basically what does the majority of the population. And it is clear that in the agricultural phase, the large majority of the population was dealing with directly the transformation of the goods relating to the land. And today, in the information era, in the civilized Western world, the large part of the population deals in some way or the other with the information. So there are many reasons that come with that idea. In science, the shift of paradigm are the new inventions, basically. The new inventions, the new new vision of the world that really change and extend dramatically the potential and the vision of what it was before, created the new paradigm, particularly in the moment in which those new ideas demonstrate to be effective. So you invent the atom, and the atom is not just a theory, it's energy. So it's something that cannot be conceived with the old paradigm, basically. But the old paradigm, you can do a lot of things with the classical, still with the classical physics. That's why there is that idea that the old paradigm is still useful for certain things, but you cannot break the atoms with the classical physics, basically, making very simple. All these ideas are in some way related to the art and to the architecture with the idea of the modernity and with the idea of the crisis. That is the link. It's the idea of modernity and the crisis that creates the link between the shift of the paradigm and the shift in architecture. So basically, when the world is completely changed, because the Industrial Revolution is there, architecture was exactly the same for around 100 years. Basically, along the whole 19th century, architecture was not able to really respond to what does it mean a society that was completely changed because of the industrial paradigm. It took many years, you know. It took exactly that moment in the 20s in which architecture in some way was able to change itself to really create a revolution in architecture in order also to adhere to that change of paradigm. That's why the idea of crisis, modernity are all interrelated, and the shift of paradigm are all interrelated in my approach. And what you have to understand, that we are dealing with a field that is basically we as architects are really very close to economics in some way. And even a book really belongs to that category, even this type of book. So the real important thing, it is useful or is not useful. That's the real question. So that will open me conceptual doors, give me key in order to operate, give me key that are useful for me to know. Gives me key that allows me to understand how to operate an architect, understand what are the issues, what are and how the other architects operated in terms of spatial decision, constructing decision, aesthetic decision. So the whole things, basically, when you approaching this type of material, at the real end, is it useful for me? It opens me door, gives me tool, gives me keys. So, and that is only is a personal decision. You engage with a certain material and you decide if it is useful or not. It can be extremely useful, can be not very useful. It depends. But we share that aspect. We are not abstract thinkers. I mean, we don't believe in truths or we don't believe in anything like that. We are persons that are operating within a series of constraints and we'll try to make things. Yes. Ah, italiana, parla italiano. E vai.
Prima di tutto le volevo fare complimenti per la scrittura degli anni 70 e mi sembra dove vado. Volevo sapere come considera il Zadig, e noi sappiamo anche che in questi ultimi mesi la sua ultima opera, diciamo, il Maxi, a Roma, e volevo sapere se il Maxi è veramente apprezzato per l'architetto, è apprezzato per quest'opera, anche se sappiamo che è un progetto di metà 10 anni fa. Avrei anche un'altra domanda.
Sì.
Quanto se ne pensa lei dell'architettura organica?
L'architettura organica ti riferisce agli anni 30? In che momento ti riferisci? L'architettura organica è un concetto molto ampio.
Di oggi, se un'architettura che
Ok, va bene, va bene, va bene.
Possiamo puntare.
Ok. Allora, I think it's better in English to answer though, no? Because the majority. So she made two questions. First of all is the Zadid Museum in Rome that we recently was finished. What was my point of view? And the second one was about organic architecture. What I think about organic architecture. Okay. The Zadid Museum, I'm a neighbor, do you see? I really have the office, 3 minutes, 4 minutes to Zadid, and my department in Alla Sapienza is just sitting there, so I'm a neighbor. As you said, it's a project of 12 years ago. If I am correct. I remember that I was interviewed with Gregotti, De Carlo, and other person discussing about this domination of Italy of foreign architects. There is the interview, the table, the round table that we did. I was the young guy, Vittorio Gregotti was old already at that time. Talking about this issue. So it's a very old project, which doesn't mean lots of things. Since you are interested into the matter, the problem is that first of all, Zadid made important, much important project after that. And for example, in my selection here, I show the BMW project that is a spectacular project. From conception, from the use of space, from the way of the movement, because the movement is not only simulated, it is real, it is incomparable. I mean, the BMW is an incomparable project with the Maxi. It's just the level is so different. And they even did other very, very nice projects. I was recently in the office, and I particularly followed all the working drawing that was done by an Italian architect actually working on the idea about that inhabited bridge in Spain that they finished a couple of years ago. That is a fantastic project and many other projects. So basically, the Maxi, it is in a kind of very beginning phase of Zadid on a way. It matured a lot after that, from my point of view. So it was really that idea that architecture and infrastructure and movement can create a flux. Basically, that is the idea. And it was the enlarged idea that she had at the time of the fire station in Vitra. So well, not a real evolution. So it was a kind of rather simple project at the end, although you think that it's complex, it's rather simple as a conception, and also in a moment in which the whole studio and even Zadid was not so experienced as a real architect and really understanding together how to put together so many things. For example, in terms of museum per se, it cannot be compared, the Maxi, to the Guggenheim in terms of functional complexity. The Guggenheim of Bilbao, of Gary, is a super functional museum. It's an incredible functional museum, while the Zadid architecture is very, very, very flat from a functional point of view. So there are lots of, let's say, level of immaturity in that project. The other thing that I have to say is that the situation was much worse because of Italy. Because Italy had this stupid paranoia to build a very dynamic architecture in a kind of traditional reinforced concrete system, which is a completely craziness. It's something crazy to do it. So, this mistake was already done with the Richard Meyer church that was a very dynamic shape that was built in an incredible, expensive way, in really very, very big piece of reinforced concrete that they are done in a completely anti-tectonic shape, because mine was an anti-tectonic shape. So you have before put the pieces and then put all precast cable, otherwise it will fall apart. So things that will end up the cost of construction for 6 million euro to 36. And same thing in some way happened to the Maxi, that was built with this type of idea of very strong reinforced concrete walls that is completely uneconomical and completely illogical. So that is another problem. Zadid, of course, didn't care because it was not a business. The construction were very happy because the cost of construction was 3 times more or 4 times more. Alright. On the other side, it is very difficult to criticize the Zadid Museum in Rome, because in any way it's a positive move, I think. Although it will cost that much, but it's positive for the city, I think. It is positive to see an architecture that try to have a relationship with the context that is more dynamic. I think it is positive for the context to have a thing of a let's say a European level, a European scale as a project. So it's a tricky issue to discuss. You should really, in order to go into this, while it is possible to, you know, talk about the book in 1.5 hours, to really show you the whole implication beside that project, we should do a little seminar, because the interesting things are very deep in order to understand. Okay? But I appreciate the question very much. The organic, we have to be very, very careful about the etiquette. And what you said, the question that you said, allow me to show you one thing of the book that is also very important. I hate etiquette. At the beginning I said, you know what I mean by etiquette? Etiquette, okay? So the idea that you label things. Because labeling is a very primitive action. It's a very type of primitive action. You need it a little bit to orient yourself. But at the end, it doesn't really mean much. So in the old book, basically, I always avoid to use etiquette. And I always try to go directly to the substance. What is the substance? So what are the things that are important and they are relevant? So, I will not approach what you say about the organicism per se, because for me it doesn't mean much. You can ask me what I think of the work of, let's say, François Roche, for example, that is an architect that tried to put together a new idea of nature, of environment, and of information technology. Or what do I think of ecological studio? Or what do I think... I don't know, of other architects, or the experience of the Bartlett, that are very much showing new relationship between nature, environment, architecture. That, if you mean that, we can talk about that. Or you can ask me, what do you think of Frank Lloyd Wright experience? Which is another thing, you know, it's another... But I can use the word organicism actually with Sullivan. Actually, Sullivan, the first guy that used the word organicism, it is Sullivan, and meant something completely different that you normally think. What he meant by organism and organicism was the idea that decoration has to be part of architecture. That he meant. That's why he used the word organicism. That is not the way organicism of nature. He really meant that the decoration has to be integral part of the architectural process, has not to be something tucked in. So you use organicism in that way. And even that your forms follow function, again, is a Sullivan concept, is exactly the same idea, goes in the same idea, and then later became something completely different, you know, like the type of, you know, idea that there is a form that corresponds to a specific function. No. Originally, so we must be very careful when you use this word in a general terms, you know. Sometimes are useful because we as architects must also to be fussy. In some phase, we have to be fussy, confused. So to be confused is also an active process for architects. So to have, you know, some time of this word that are confusing are interesting, because in that confusion we can find a way, a creative way. But if we talk seriously in order to really understand, this type of etiquettes are confusing and are not useful.
Thank you.